gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
A very, very happy, happy winter solstice to you today. A holy day for the pagans of Northern Europe and anyone living in Topanga Canyon, California. This is a great day. It's actually the basis of the Christmas holiday, largely, you know, some biblical scholars believe Jesus may have even been born in the summer. And therefore, the winter solstice holiday of the pagans was taken over. A moon festival that was actually probably created to treat winter, depression, seasonal affective disorder, a big party right as the days get to their shortest. Literally today is the shortest day of the year as far as sunlight goes. And over, over the centuries, I think they started to recognize it gets really depressing right around then. So probably a good idea to throw a big party with presents and get everybody together and remind everybody about family and friends and how much you love them and how much they care about you. And that was a great holiday for centuries. And then, of course, the Christians came by and went, oh, by tip of the sword, I'd like to introduce you to a new religion. And we'd like to borrow your holiday, if we might, for a bit. Thanks very much. And voila, Christmas on December 25th was born. And it became a solid day every 25th, whereas solstice moves much like Chinese New Year and a lot of other moon-based, lunar-based holidays is actually today. Today is winter solstice, and last night was an eclipse on winter solstice eve. From an astrological standpoint, I mean, I personally think that there's probably a lot of people with crystals and long hangy drapey clothing that were particularly caught up in yesterday's solstice eve celebrations. And so a happy winter solstice to all of you who were unnecessarily insulted during the whole Christine O'Donnell mess where I'm not a witch, I'm you, as if the worst thing she could be, you know, was a witch. Anyways, so I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. Thank you for joining me. 1-800-STEPH-12 is the number, stephaniemiller.com. You can email them all while they're on vacation, and I'm sure they will be happy to receive all your messages, or at least 86% of them on their return. And, of course, I'm in studio today with Tony Sorrentino, who's lovingly decided to blow off the holidays of all sorts, Christic, pagan, or otherwise, and join us in studio and run the board, thankfully, because I've said this before, and I'll say it again, he's the most useful man at this radio station, and you can take that however you want. Of course, also joining me in studio today and on the Ustream as well, Chris Bono, also known as at Bono Man on the Twitter.
That's me.
There you are. And he'll be watching our chat today and helping us integrate that into the conversation. Of course, we are streaming live at HowlSparks.com. And there's a great group of chatters already starting to gather in there. And even more so as soon as I bother to Twitter it out. I always get behind on that. But I have to apologize if I am behind in any of my tweeting and any of that, because
you've been very busy.
I have, but with something very specific. Last night, actually yesterday afternoon, I went and did something. I did the impossible. That's right. Hal Sparks did something, ladies and gentlemen, that there are a large number of human beings who believe this. There's human beings are just not capable of this very act. There is no way anyone can do this. I read the START Treaty yesterday.
What?
Oh, yes. Something that Mitch McConnell said was impossible. That, if you'll recall from the show yesterday, we had a clip of Lindsey Graham. Let's hear Lindsey Graham's complaint about his dealing with START. We still have that in there, Tony? Let's hear what Lindsey Graham had to deal with. Because, man. All right, here you go. This was Lindsey Graham.
In conclusion to my colleagues, it's been a week from hell. It's been a week where you're dealing with a lot of big issues, from taxes to funding the government to special interest politics. And I've had some time to think about START, but not a lot. And it's really wearing on the body.
Okay. It's exhausting. I mean, he's basically Lindsey Graham has reached the limit of his humanity. Put aside the concept, the idea that somebody might have to actually run a marathon or do a triathlon or something. The week that Lindsey Graham has had to do to think about start at this late point in the game, I mean, for the Democrats to come in here and actually suggest somehow that they deal with a nuclear treaty right now. Where did this come from? How could they? They haven't had time. This is all being rushed. What's going on? Well, actually, it's not rushed. This bill, this treaty, has been around for 8 months. It has been through committee, and as he can, I think John Kerry says it best when he got on the floor yesterday and pointedly dissected, let's say, the lies of the right. This is, everybody's been saying, oh, the rushing, and why do we have to do this so quickly, and they're trying to shove this through. Let's let John Kerry explain it to you.
But I would say to my friend from Kentucky that...
By the way, he means Mitch McConnell,
just because
not me.
You say something doesn't make it true. And our friends on the other side of the aisle seem to have a habit of repeating things that have been completely refuted by every fact that there is. Our old friend Patrick Moynihan used to remind all of us in the United States Senate and in the country that everybody is entitled to their own opinion, but they are not entitled to their own facts. John Adams made that famous statement that facts are stubborn things, and facts are stubborn things. The facts are that this treaty is not being rushed. This treaty was delayed at the request of Republicans.
What?
This treaty was delayed 13 times separately by Senator Lugar to respect their desire to have more time to deal with the modernization issue, which the administration has completely, totally, thoroughly dealt with in good faith. I'd like to know where the good faith comes from on the other side occasionally. They put extra money in. They sat and negotiated. They sent people to Arizona to brief Senator Kyle personally.
Ding, ding, ding. What do
for
we
weeks,
have for
we delayed
today?
The process of moving forward on this treaty in order to accommodate our friends on the other side of the aisle. And now, fully accommodated, with their requests entirely met, they come back and say, oh, it's being rushed. Well, Mr. President, today marks our sixth day of debate on the New START Treaty. That's a fact.
Yeah, okay. There are the facts. They've been debating it for 6 days. The treaty itself has been available for 8 months. Now, I know a lot of people are going, well, after all this wagging about of the appropriations bills and the health care bill and everyone saying, well, these bills are thousands of pages long. How can a human being be expected to tear through this? No one has read this. Blah, blah. You notice they're not saying nobody has read this. You know the reason why they're not using that particular phrase? Because the treaty is 17 pages long, and the implementation paperwork on it is 25 pages long. It's really simple. And a good portion of this, by the way, if you read the treaty, is a page is dedicated to an ICBM missile will be listed as one ICBM missile, like that kind of thing. So you can't say a site is one, you know, we're going to secure one site. No, you're going to secure these things bomb by bomb. You can't just say, I mean, it's a simple clarification, single sentences that just make it very clear that if the Russians or we have a site in it, if there are five nuclear warheads, they count as five nuclear warheads, not, oh, we secured one site and we can move on. You have to secure each nuclear warhead itself. And the Republicans are going, we can't possibly, this is all being rushed. Okay, you know what's rushed? You know who's feeling rushed right now? Not the Republicans. You know who's feeling rushed? People who want to steal a nuclear weapon and put it in the hands of terrorists. They're feeling rushed right now because once this treaty goes through, funding from both the United States, the UN, and Russia towards securing these nukes goes into effect. And a lot of these sites that are now have doors on them that look like a saloon in a Clint Eastwood movie from 1968,
yikes,
suddenly will become secure. That's the whole point is shutting these down, removing these weaker sites, getting these nuclear weapons that are sitting around out there secured. No one feels more rushed right now when they think about this treaty than the Republicans, it seems, except for maybe someone who would like to steal a nuclear warhead and detonate it someplace. It's stunning to me. We have to take a break. I'm going to get completely wrapped up with this. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Do you think this even crosses their mind? Do you think the Republicans realize in any sense that the longer they delay on something like this, the longer nuclear warheads remain unsecured in this world, and terrorists need to be very aware. You know, I think they're more aware of what's in this treaty than the Republican Party is.
Don't tell them, Hal. Don't let them know.
The important thing is getting these things secured. But it seems like the Republicans are going to make good on their threat about don't ask, don't tell, that if the Democrats dare put it up for a vote, they're going to scuttle start because their social agenda is more important than the security of the entire earth. This is their standard. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEP-12 is their number. How do you defend that? Can you? Can you defend delay on start? We'll have David Bender after the break to see if he can come up with a way. I can't figure out a way. We're also streaming live, HalSparks.com/Ustream. We'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
No need to thank us. It's what we do.
Who the hell are you guys?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I am Hal Sparks. And, of course, Tony already at it in full effect, bringing us back in with Led Zeppelin after being taken out by Led Zeppelin. I see a theme happening. Because if the levee's going to break, we might as well be listening.
I play Fool in the Rain.
Right, because it's raining outside, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a torrential downpour. And by the way, it's been raining so heavily in Southern California that we are supposed to get in 6 days more rain than we've gotten in a decade. And it will double in the next 2 days. As much rain as we have gotten, we will get double that.
It's not a particularly hard rain. It just doesn't stop.
Yeah, exactly. It's relentless.
I know.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, damp and moldy and soggy. it's California Christmas. California Christmas. Get your rain slicker on. And but on the line, by the way, I'm going to try and run my own phones here, is David Bender.
Nicely done.
Thank you. I'm a fully functioning host. Not only am I editing live video as we stream, but I'm answering my own phones and I think maintaining relatively cogent points. And by the way,
but Tony is still the most useful man in the business.
All right. Well, I will not argue with you on that point. We stand in full agreement, sir. however you want to take that as well.
Unlike the United States Senate that is sitting down.
This is true.
Disagreement.
This is stunning to me. Okay, so yesterday I see all this stuff coming down on the floor. And, I think it was Cochran last week threatened that if the Democrats brought up don't ask, don't tell for a vote, that they would essentially scuttle start.
Truth in Broadcasting. It was Bob Corker.
Thank you, Corker. Thank you.
Tennessee.
Yes. Bob Corker, yes, Republican from Tennessee, says that if they and by the way, he did not say he himself would do it. He said it was sort of like a veiled warning because right now the Republicans who stand on principle against bills that they even all agree on, because that seems to be the methodology now. They come forward and they say to him, or I guess whatever, and go, if Don't Ask, Don't Tell goes through, we're going to put in, like, anonymous holds and all kinds of secret holds and stops on Start. And is that what's going on right now? Is this, I mean, are they really that blind?
No. They're certainly not blind because they know exactly what they're doing. And it's not just petulance about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Although if you now look up the word petulance in the dictionary, you find the new picture of John McCain.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think he's shouldering out Lindsey Graham and John Boehner. I mean, they're really jockeying for that definition. There's so...
Trust me, with Lindsey Graham, you know, there's very little jockeying involved, but we won't go there.
All right.
Here's where we should go. Understand that this is Start and Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and even including the horrific but ultimately essential compromise over the extension of the Bush tax cuts is all of a piece. It is all one thing. And when you pull the curtain back and the little guy and the small dog, it is all yapping, we hate Barack Obama,
right,
and we can't give him anything to say that he has done. That's it's really simple. It has nothing to do with anything else. That's why Mitch McConnell announced he's against the START treaty. He is sending this message. Look, they've got the votes. There are now 9 Republicans who have endorsed START. It will likely pass on Wednesday this week. It's going to happen.
Right.
But all this is about how at the end of not only this day, this week, this year, and all the presidential campaign that started even before 2010's election was over. That presidential campaign was in full swing, and this is the biggest crime against the American people, is that there is no such thing as a legislative session anymore. You know, it used to be back in my day, I remember talking to President Grover Cleveland about this, is that you used to have a time when they actually said, well, we're going to work now because we don't have to worry about the election till next year.
Right.
The election's right
totally
now.
It's a constant.
And that's what this is all about.
It's now a reality show where every episode you have to jockey to not be voted off the island, as it were.
That's right. That's right.
And essentially, that's the mechanics of not only how the American people, in some cases, need to decide what's going on in their world, but also how when you're raising money now, thanks to Citizens United, you can't afford to take a break from campaigning, even if you're one of the good guys, because the bad guys are going to be so far ahead of you by the time it comes. That you're going to be now. Keep in mind, by the way.
You know those pesky little facts that
yes.
John Kerry was talking about a minute ago.
Sure.
Here's a pesky little fact. Under the ruling of Citizens United, they're able to give these unlimited amounts of money to what are called C4s. C4s are those groups that are spending on those ads. But there's also a component of that law that says a portion of that money needs to go to things that are not just campaigns. So the reason that Karl Rove's group has been spending money around some of these issues and going into congressional districts to say, call your senator to talk about START or to talk about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, is they're required to
do
by
it by law. Right.
So it's even worse. They've got to be spending money now just to justify their existence.
Right. And P.S., interestingly enough, C4 is also the most loose plastic explosive traveling around out there and is used in more demolitions than anything. So I think it's interesting.
And it's not limited under the START Treaty, is it?
No, it is not. P.S., can you hold with us through the break? Because there's
Absolutely.
Something else I want to bring up. David Bender's on the line with us. Chris Bono's in studio with us. Tony is running the board. Miranda will be joining us on the phones. We will have a whole family here. This is now becoming a winter solstice celebration with those near and dear to us. I'm Hal Sparks. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. So, one of the few Jimi Hendrix songs that has kazoo in it, but I think an important turning point in music, where the kazoo finally got its due in rock music.
I think it had a pedal as well. Didn't it kazoo with a pedal?
No, he's just singing it, and honestly, he doubles his solo with a kazoo.
There it is.
Right. But that's an important thing we need to cover with David Bender on the phone.
Yeah.
The effect of kazoo on modern rock, as put forth by Jimi Hendrix in 1967, I think it was. Something like that.
I in fact, played kazoo on that track.
Did you?
that was me. I've never announced that publicly before, but, you know, what the hell.
The interesting thing is you hang out with the likes of David Crosby and that gang, and I would not be surprised one iota if a young David Bender worked his way into the studio, like walked into a studio with a kazoo and short pants on. And Jimi Hendrix is leaning up against the wall going, hey, man, let me borrow that for a second.
Truth to tell, man, Stephen Stills and Jimi Hendrix used to jam all the time.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Stephen has found in his vault, and someday hopefully we're going to see the light of it, some of the sessions of things that were never released.
Wow.
So, there may be more Hendrix coming.
You just, you just made Tony turgid, I'm just saying, with that conversation. Which I think we're all welcome to do at any given time. Again, the most useful man at this radio station.
Absolutely true.
So we were talking before the break. For those of you that are just joining us, 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. And on the line with me is the inimitable. The inimitable. I was going to say the never imitated, but that's a much better way of saying it. David, so here's the thing. We're talking about how the Republicans are just flat out have made a political decision. They're going to oppose anything that the Democrats do just to make Barack Obama look bad. This is their goal, that they don't want him to have any successes. So they're willing to risk loose nuclear warheads that it being at easy access near the border of Russia and any number of rogue states just to make, in their mind, Barack Obama look bad. Let's say, like, this will show him if somebody sneaks a suitcase bomb into Miami or into a, you know, any port of call. This will show them.
The problem I got, Hal, quite seriously, and this is where you and I always, you know, our roads potentially diverge. I believe that the mistake that the president makes every time on this, and he's getting it done. He got Don't Ask, Don't Tell done. He got health care done.
Right.
He got unemployment insurance extended. He's getting these incremental things done, but they continue to hold a gun to the American people's head, not to Barack Obama's, to all of ours.
Right.
And at some point or another, the consequences need to be absolutely stark. What you just said needs to be said by the President of the United States, that these people, John Kerry said it on the floor of the Senate.
Yep.
He said, you know, to his fellow senators on the other side of the aisle, my friends, have you no shame?
Yeah.
The same thing that was said about Joe McCarthy.
Right.
But they have no shame because there is no shame required of them.
Well,
there needs to be a penalty for this.
I agree. And I also don't think that they deal in ramifications. Again, this is a party, and I speak directly of the GOP. This is a party that that runs on running. They have no interest in actual governing. Amongst them, they have a large group that treats, like I said, like America, like a hedge fund that they want to cash out of half the time, and then the rest of them view it as a sort of temporary necessity as a theocracy until the second coming or something along those lines. And those are the two major groups making up the GOP right now. This is a vote that came up, by the way, and I don't know if you heard about this. The Republicans shot down a bill to prevent child marriage in the developing world. Okay. And their reasoning was, I'm quoting from Raw Story. Daniel Trenser did this. In voting against the International Protecting Girls by Preventing Child Marriage Act, which was the name of it on Thursday, Republicans said they would not abide by the cost of the bill and voiced fears that it would result in the U.S. government supporting abortions for women in the developing world. This is the reason why they don't want to support a bill that keeps people from taking child brides, from marrying 11-year-olds and forcing them to produce children. And by the way, the bill has no mention of abortion and requires no new funding. It does neither of the things, but they floated this concept. By the way, it sailed through unanimously earlier this month before it went through this smear campaign in the House, where they basically put out these things. Well, this is just going to lead to abortions and you know, maybe it won't. Maybe if an 11-year-old isn't forced into pregnancy during a forced marriage, maybe that's the avoiding of the abortion.
It's like death panels. These are phrases that are made up, that they have no connection to reality. Reality is not an important part of much of the debate that is going on in our politics. And that once you get to that place, once you go, wait a minute, this is all kabuki. This is all theater of the absurd. It's Ionesco kabuki. Then it doesn't really matter what they say.
Right.
Because they don't even remember.
Right.
You can't say to them, you said this last week, but see here, I can show you on page 12, that's not true. And they go, I never said that.
Well,
what do you think I said that?
Again, you have situations where McCain and people like him are threatening to filibuster themselves, essentially. Like, what kind of an idiot would bring a bill to this floor? It has your name on it. You brought it to the floor. And now you, like, I've got to take a principled stand against who? Against yourself? It's amazing.
McCain divided against himself.
He shall not stand for long because his knees and his hips get creaky. That part is stunning to me. So the START Treaty is a full bore. You can read it on your iPad. 17 pages long. It has a 25 page, depending on how it's formatted and what you're looking at. 25 to 22 page implementation strategy. Most of which has all kinds of bones in modernization for new military funding that the Republicans are very happy to get most of the time.
And you remember how you remember where this all came from. This
right.
START goes back to a guy that the Republicans would like to put on Mount Rushmore.
Right,
Ronald Reagan, who said, "Trust but verify." That's
right.
What the START Treaty is.
Mm-hmm.
It's Ronald Reagan's "Trust but verify,"
right.
And these people are demagoguing Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, they would literally filibuster something that Ronald Reagan put through. I would be really interested to see. I would love for the president or any member of his cabinet or any of the House or the GOP to put forward a bill specifically that was something that Reagan championed during the 80s and watch the Republicans shoot it down because they have no idea. Like, because it would never get through. But I honestly think you'd have Mitch McConnell going, "This is a travesty. You can't have something like that," about anything.
Ronald Reagan would be driven out of this party.
Yeah.
That's the truth of it. If we're being honest and looking at who these people are now, Ronald Reagan, who you'll recall was perceived as a crazy right-wing lunatic when he ran for the Republican nomination the first time, would be a moderate in the party today.
Yeah, and if anything, he would be in danger. If he was a senator or a House member, he'd be in danger of losing his seat. There would be stories running in newspapers all over the place that Senator Reagan from California is in danger of losing his seat to a Tea Partier.
Yep, absolutely right. And as a matter of fact, if you look at these 9 Republican votes, which I was just doing during the break, you see that the idea of the perpetual election, 3 of the Republicans are Republicans who are leaving the Senate. Actually, 2 of them. Robert Bennett of Utah, who was driven out by the Tea Party.
Exactly.
For being insufficially conservative. 3 of them. Judd Gregg is leaving the Senate.
Mitch McConnell wept over the loss of Judd Gregg last week.
He didn't weep about the Dream Act. He didn't weep about, people who are really suffering. He wept about Judd Gregg. Judd Gregg, George Voinovich, and Bob Bennett are 3 of the 9 Republicans voting for this, and they can do it because they're not going to be there.
Yep.
And the some of the ones who are voting for it like Scott Brown from Massachusetts or Olympia Snow, they're running in states in Maine and Massachusetts where there's no way they can defend against this in their general election. So they have to be for it. This is all about the perpetual electoral system that we are stuck with now. And, you know, I never used to favor, I got to say this, I've never favored term limits because I think it is an election for dummies.
Right.
It basically says the voters are too stupid, so we're going to take the choices away from them. We never would have had, you know, extra terms for FDR. Ted Kennedy was in the Senate for 40 years, got more done than most people in 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
There are real arguments for letting people run for reelection. I'm now starting to think that there should be only one term for everybody. This is insane.
Well, I certainly think that if you're going to have term limits, you should have them kind of blatantly across the board. The idea, by the way, that a president has two terms, but the Senate, you can just stay in forever. And the House,
right,
arguably, that's the weird part, because all these guys have to do, there is a waiting game in this, because they know that all they have to do is really hold out for about maybe 18 months. And that, you know, and by the way, in regard to what you were saying about the constant electoral machine, in regard to the START treaty, by the way, it does look like you said it's going to go through tomorrow. But did you hear Mitch McConnell's quote on it? He said, no senator should be forced to make decisions like this so we can tick off another item on someone's political checklist before the end of the year. Never mind the fact that there are loose nuclear weapons in the world and that we're trying to get a handle on them. There's this new story that comes out that Yemen has nuclear materials loose in it, by the way, which would, through a coordination of the countries involved in this treaty, this would help clean up. But all
never mind the fact, Hal, that the reason this is all the end of the year is because
they put it off.
Hasn't had a vote all year long for 2 years because of Mitch McConnell.
Right.
It's
stunning to me that they literally spent 8 months of this treaty, a 17-page document with a 22-page follow-up. This is not the health care bill where they can wag around 2,000 pages, which, by the way, if you're going to deal with health care and the variant illness and special needs of an 330 million people, I would hope you wouldn't do it with a five-page document. See how well the Bush administration did with their two-page TARP, suggestions. How about this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I think most of the bills that the Republicans put forward are written with, like, crayons and hammers. And so they don't understand.
I don't know what you're saying. The Bush administration didn't propose TARP. That was Obama. He did that last week.
Right, totally.
Bush had nothing to do with TARP.
I'll tell you, in a lot of ways, that's kind of true, because right when that was coming forward, the Obama administration sat down with McCain. You remember that whole business where McCain suspended his campaign and he was going to go to, and they're going to sit there. He didn't ask a single question at that whole thing. Obama's entire team was completely engaged during this. And basically, at one point, I think Barack Obama turned to him and said, John, do you have anything that you want to add or anything? He literally tried to include John McCain in the conversation. John McCain's response was, I prefer to listen. This was what he said. I prefer to listen. It's because you have nothing to add. So,
and that's when Bush realized that McCain had checked out.
Right.
But the truth is, I'm making a joke, but the fact is, Republicans now, if you poll them, they don't remember that George Bush had proposed TARP and the bank bailout.
Right.
These were things that a Republican president argued for, and a Democratic president is getting blamed for.
Well, and they also implemented. The interesting thing is, the version that Bush put forward was a three-page document. Remember that nonsense? And then the Obama team literally came in and said, we're going to be the ones in charge of this. There's no way that McCain can win under these circumstances, because this would be a travesty. They literally doubled down. At that point, and if you read, like, The Promise and some of the other books where they talk about the early part of the last part of the campaign into the transition, Obama and his team were like, if McCain takes this over, he's not even paying attention. This guy does not care, and he's just basically going to take this two-page document that Bush had, which is give all the money to the Fed, let the Fed dole it out, and nobody can be accountable for it. And the Obama administration literally said, we've got to craft how this actually works. And now it's going to turn a profit by the time they're done. The way Obama actually constructed it. We got to take a break. Do you want to stay with us through the bottom of the hour? Because we love having you.
Sure.
I'm for it.
Happy to be here.
Awesome. And glad to have you. David Bender on the line with us. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-1-2 is our number. And, I mean, at what point does that pure politics start endangering lives? And when did the GOP get called out for it? It's stunning to me. We'll be back right after this.
What the hell was that?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. And still in line with us is David Bender, breaking all the rules, as they say. I'm sure that's one of your favorite Ozzy Osbourne songs. Tony and I were having a discussion during the break about what is David Bender's favorite Ozzy song. And I know it's just, for you, it must be impossible to decide.
It's very hard for me, but during the break, I was eating my morning bat, so it
oh, right, that's true. Yeah, but you just have bad eggs, right?
It's not things I don't normally share with people, but what the heck,
why not? And by the way,
head of a bat.
By the way, I do want to extend the invitation tomorrow for you to be in studio with us all day, because I can't have Hump Day by myself. That wouldn't work. That doesn't make sense. And granted, we have Tony here, who is the most useful man at the radio station. but we will need somebody else to be the equivalent of what I would normally do. You have to come in and kind of overtalk.
You were asking me to be your hump.
There you go.
I'm sorry. What hump?
What hump? Thank you, Marty Feldman. If you could join us, that'd be great. I would also like to talk to you at some point, too, about the Progressive Cruise, which we are both doing. And then, of course, Pat Schroeder, who we had on yesterday, is now a new addition.
She's going to be great. Wasn't she fun?
She was. She's really funny. And historically, she's one of these women who's really, was at the cutting edge of this and needs to be remembered for that.
And the thing about Pat Schroeder is she ran for president 20 years before Hillary Clinton did. She was the first woman to ever seriously be considered as a candidate for president. She broke she started chipping at the glass ceiling before anybody else. And the other thing she did was on the defense committee, and you talked to her about it with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. She was the one who always said, you know what, they keep talking about doing these budgets that are protecting women and children. That's what our defense budget is for. But as Pat Schroeder rightly points out, they never ask the women and the children.
Right.
Do you want to spend all this money? And Alan Grayson, also joining us on the cruise, Alan Grayson had the best named bill I've ever seen. We talk about these pieces of legislation, child marriage legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Grayson proposed a bill in this last House of Representatives called War is Making Us Poor. The War is Making Us Poor bill did not get a lot of votes, but those are the kinds of people who are going to be with us on the Progressive Cruise. And frankly, if we're going to have a comeback in 2012, if we're going to take on the Tea Party, you're going to take it on with people like Alan Grayson and Pat Schroeder and people who know how to speak.
I agree.
Honestly and plainly.
I would even go so far as to say Alan Grayson may be actually more helpful to the conversation as a former congressman than as a congressman, because we always kind of joke that Sarah Palin quit her job as a half of a governor to become half of a pundit, but there was a reason why she did that.
She knew what she was doing.
Yep.
She is actually having, look at all the elections she had an impact on. If she was governor of Alaska, she wouldn't have been running around the country getting these crazed Tea Party people to run in primaries all over America.
Richard Nixon
made his comeback. When he was politically left for dead, he went around in 1966 campaigning for other people before he ran for president.
And
she's following a long-term game plan. But people like Bobby Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy Jr., who has never run for office. It is possible, and he will also be with us. Let me say it again on the Progressive Cruise, progressivecruise.com. Bobby Kennedy has had more of an impact on the environment being outside of the U.S. Congress than most of these people who've been on the inside for 20 years who can't get anything done. So, we have this mindset that you got to run for office. The fact is you got to do something.
Mm-hmm. That's true, inside or outside. Thank you so much, David Bender, for joining us this hour. It's been great to have you. And by the way, we will see you all 3 hours tomorrow.
I'll be there with bells
rest up.
On, which is always seasonal.
No watching sports tonight because you'll ruin your voice, and we need you in all 3 hours tomorrow.
Edgar!
And, of course, Chris Bono and I will be discussing Palin with our chat room at HalSparks.com right after this. We'll be talking about the Progressive Cruise. You are awesome. Thank you, David Bender. I'm Hal Sparks. This is the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation, and I hope she is actually vacationing. I think they're getting a little better at it now. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We were just talking to David Bender about the fact that the Republicans may be attempting on some front to make good on their threat to Obama, that if he and Harry Reid bring up Don't Ask, Don't Tell for a vote, which happened last weekend and passed with an overwhelming majority, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, not only a good piece of legislation for the LGBT among us, but also a good piece of legislation for national security, because using someone's sexuality as a weapon to kick them out of the service when they're willing to give their lives to protect the rest of us, and not just on the battlefield, which seems to be the fixation for a lot of people, but also behind the scenes as translators, as intelligence gatherers and the like, as we move towards a situation where that can't be used as a weapon to deny people, to blackmail people, to control them, we effectively take a weapon out of the arsenal of our enemies. So a great moment, but because Obama brought that through, the Republicans are threatening to scuttle the START Treaty and are attempting to do that. They've been doing that over the last 6 days. And, of course, complaining that they haven't had time to focus on it, even though it's been around for 8 months and it's only 17 pages long. That's right, 17 whole pages. Ladies and gentlemen, you have elected your Republican representatives, and they are too busy to read 17 pages of about the control of loose nukes, because if they did, it would give the president a victory. This is their mentality. By the way, we have a couple of people on line right now calling in. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. Let's go to Robin in Bangor. There's Robin. How are you, Robin?
Hey, Chris. Hey, Hal.
Hey.
First-time caller, long-time listener.
I wish I had some sort of Randy Rhodes kind of poink,
ding, ding, ding. What do we have for Johnny?
We're like when somebody calls in. But I'll work on it. I'll work on it.
All right. I wanted to talk about the bizarre turnaround from Collins and Snow from Maine. They are the go-to Republicans for Democrats,
right,
when no one else will talk to them. The door opens usually in their office.
Sure. Well, and I think, do you think that has anything to do with them being women and being a little bit, I think, longer in their vision than their male colleagues in the South?
Possibly, or that Mainers are just so ornery. And,
right.
I don't know whether it's the long winter months or whatever it is, but, an independent almost won the governorship here this past election.
Right.
And I've never seen that in any other state I've lived in. Usually independents are kind of laughed off. But in Maine, that's more run-of-the-mill.
Right. I think in many ways they seem to be making more principled votes than their colleagues in the GOP. They just seem to be.
I think they choose their battles. I think they choose their principled votes. I think they're going to turn their noses up at START the same way that everybody else is.
I think so, but it is going to pass tomorrow, and it might just be one of those things where they have to secure, since they know it's going to pass, they take one of those safety votes to secure their base, which I think you're right. But I think if asked on their merits, based on their merits, they may actually, they would have voted for it in that regard.
Yeah. If it hadn't been Obama, if it hadn't been the situation it is currently, they would have voted for it, as well as a number of other Republicans. Just like the 9/11 bill, I think they would have voted for that, just like a number of other Republicans.
Sure.
If it hadn't been Obama, if it hadn't been
right.
the situation it is currently.
Politically expedient or necessary for their own political survival, which is
right.
a shame that your leadership is so entrenched in one particular methodology. They only have one ploy in the one arrow in their whole quiver, which is deny everything. Instead of, I mean, it's stunning because how
yeah.
do you, as a member of that party, then have any kind of principled, genuine principled vote where you can stand on it? Basically, because let's say I have 9 votes coming up that I would vote for, but Mitch McConnell will only let me vote for 2 of them.
Right.
Then where do my principles have any meaning at all? Because they're always being held hostage by my, by my party in that regard.
Well, the backroom conversation inevitably is going to be you hold out except for maybe one vote and we'll make sure that you get these things for your state or whatever your
right.
agenda is.
And are you saying that the Republicans run the Senate the way they accuse Chicago of running all its politics? Is that what you're saying?
I would never say that.
Yeah, how dare you, Robin and Bangle?
No, I will. Please.
By the way, you're actually familiar with Chris Bono, are you not? Are you...
I'm familiar with both Chris and you, Hal.
Yeah, I know.
I remember a particular conversation in the parking lot of House of Pies about the new Spider-Man movie at the time.
Absolutely. But that's all people need to know.
That's the only details I want to let.
That's why we can have a private life. Thanks so much, Robin, for calling in.
All right. You guys have a great day.
Cheers, you too.
Good to hear from you, man.
And because I don't want – we can't let – the Chicago thing go unanswered when we've got Greg Alexander on the line.
Good morning. This is Greg, first-time caller, long-time listener.
Hold on one second. I've got something.
I am very disappointed.
No, that's not what I wanted. No, that's not it either. Hold on.
I'm in love, and I don't care who knows.
Yeah, that'll do. Okay. Greg Alexander. Of course, my producer extraordinaire for my Chicago show on WCPT Radio every Saturday from 11 to 1 Chicago
hello,
time.
Yeah, hello, Greg. How you doing, you know?
Good morning, Chris Bono. How are you?
Hello.
Have you been – I'm sure you're following a good deal of this, Greg.
I'm staying on top of this, and the Republicans are just kind of getting me sick.
Are they?
Yeah. I hope that one day everybody says, wait a minute, they're not playing nice.
They're not...
I don't see that coming anytime soon.
Well, the funny thing is – I don't think they're playing at all. Well, I take that back. I think they are playing. I don't think they're working at all.
I think they're playing the wrong game. Aren't they supposed to help, what's that word? Oh, yeah, Americans?
Yeah, but I think they think they are. I think their idea of what America is the 4,800 billionaire, like heavy millionaires and billionaires who are affected by the estate tax law. And the rest of us, the other 330 million... are really just, as Henry Kissinger would call us, useless eaters, where we're just, taking up space or working so that we can give our money to the rich. I mean, you've got people like Ben Quayle arguing for, a new Tea Party candidate run by a vice president of the old guard. And then you've got Rand Paul, the son of Ron Paul, who a lot of people, I think, have, even grudging respect for on the left in some ways, because at times with his stance on the Fed and other things, you're like, okay, he's nuts sometimes, and I'm not a big fan of some of the racist stuff he said in the 90s, certainly. But you go, okay, at least he sticks to his guns and he really means what he says. But you've got Rand Paul actually coming out going, we all work for rich people, and we all need to deal with that fact so that we don't ruin America for them. Going, at what point does the existence of the middle class ruin it for rich people? Why do we have to become a serfdom and a fiefdom to protect the rich? Wouldn't the middle class have actually more money and gain more wealth from doing business with the rest of the world, that rich people could make even more money off of a middle class than they could off of a poverty class? I don't know.
But then those middle class people could move into being the rich people.
Well, you might be.
Oh, no.
You might be right there, because it's the a lot of people have argued that Alan Greenspan's bubbles were specifically set up to shake the bucket, as it were, so that nobody could crawl out of it. You know, the idea being is that you bait That's
a crabbing reference.
Well, yeah, exactly. You bait the middle class into the stock market or into the real estate market for over a period of a couple of years, and then you just pull the rug out from under them on purpose so that they never can gain ground.
They don't want anybody in.
Right, exactly. And Greg Alexander, by the way, you do a fantastic job.
Thank you so much, Hal Sparks. You know who else does a fantastic job? Is that Tony guy?
That's true.
Yay. He is wonderful.
Tony, I don't have to tell you. You know what kind of job that it is to do this, and he's up a full, he gets up before the rest of the people who work here, which is, that makes him get up maybe a full hour and a half after I do. He may wake up any moment now.
It's so tough.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tony. Say hello.
It's only because I live so far away.
That's true. Yeah, Tony lives in Antelope Valley. I'm kidding. He's,
more importantly, on Crosstown Traffic, it's a homemade kazoo.
Oh, that's true. It's
where they make it with the comb and the cellophane.
I thought so.
It may or may not be pumped through a Leslie speaker. That's unconfirmed.
Yeah, well, he did it. He definitely mic'd it, and they ran it through some of his gear a couple times. But the one that's actually on there is just straight up mic'd, I think.
And oddly enough, Dave Mason from Traffic sings background on Crosstown Traffic.
Fascinating.
My feeling is that you and Tony are going to IM on Facebook about
this. That's true. You guys are now BFFs
forever.
You're going to
start up your own group.
We got to take a break. Thanks so much, Greg Alexander, for calling in. You rule WCPT Radio in Chicago for all your progressive talk radio needs.
Greg.
Carrying this Stephanie Miller show every day of the week. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We've got some calls on the line right now, and we'll get to them after the break. It's a fascinating prospect. Is the GOP just about running and not about governing? I mean, this might be no surprise to anybody, but has it gotten so blatant that they'd literally risk us all to do it? I think they would. We'll be back right after this. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ongoing train wreck aside, I love this.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm Hal Sparks, part of your cult of personality on this lovely winter solstice day. A happy winter solstice to all of our pagan and Wiccan friends out there. And
don't forget the Druids.
Yes, right. I do every year, and I apologize. That's, of course, the voice of Chris Bono joining me in studio today.
What about the Luddites? Are they pagans as well? Considered?
I don't know. I haven't gotten a call from them in weeks.
Yeah. they've actually been calling by standing in front of their yard.
Yeah.
Just yelling.
Yeah. This is how a Luddite tweets. Hear ye, hear ye. Right.
I'm sending a link to you now.
Right. And it's actually a chain link.
That's right.
So, we were talking a bit about this, before the break. But at a certain point, and Chris brought this up during the break, and he kind of wanted to address this a little bit. How do you, as a Republican, how do you run on anything when your whole political strategy has been about nothing? I mean, ultimately, you can say, I do think there is something they think they can run on with a certain narrow group, which is we stop the Obama takeover of the country, that the socialist agenda that Obama was trying to push to turn us all into Marxist, socialist.
Hello, citizen.
Anti-Christian.
How are you, citizen? Hello, citizen.
Right.
Yeah, that whole fascistic.
That concept, I don't know what you're talking about. That made no sense.
It was like a 50s, turn in your neighbor. I don't know what I'm talking. Enjoy. Keep going.
All right, good. Thanks, Chris Bono, everybody.
That was my Carl Pilkington moment.
Right. I bring Chris on because he represents the layman out
gee,
there.
What's going on in the country?
In his mind. Mm-hmm. I actually have a lot more respect for the layman than it seems that Chris Bono has.
Mm.
But the point is that how do you run a campaign on, I stopped the child marriage law. I stopped the anti-nuclear proliferation treaty. I stopped him from... Now, because of what I've done, we've defunded the ability for the president to make sure you can't be kicked off your insurance once you get sick. These are the principled stands I have made as a Republican. I have made sure that even though people can Arabic translators and soldiers who are willing to give their lives for the freedom of people that even the people that would deny them freedom, I still want them kicked out of the military because they're gay. And I've made the moral stance that I will be pro-drone attack and anti-gay in the military. I want to unfund the VA, and yet, you know, my principled stand on military issues has been the elimination of gays, the attempt to keep it. How in the world do you run on that? What is the root of your? I mean, maybe it's maybe somebody out there in radio land, as they say, can tell me. 1-800-STEF-12 is our number. Are you a Republican? Do you listen in? What do you run on? Do you run on the fact that you supposedly stopped, you know, the Obama totalitarian regime from doing what? From the First Lady suggesting that children should eat vegetables instead of ding-dongs and ho-hos for lunch every day? So much so that this is, the principal stand that Sarah Palin is taking. She's now touring the country as the anti-Michelle Obama, essentially, showing up at schools with cookies, saying that the First Lady wants to deny you cookies. What kind of childish...
Michelle Obama hates joy for children.
That's
what she's saying.
Yeah, she's trying to portray Michelle Obama as the child sniffer in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Oh, man.
When the exact opposite is going on. Let's see. Let's see if Brian in Eureka, Kansas can answer this. Brian, are you there? Or, sorry, Eureka, California. Let's see. Do we have him? Do we have Brian? Are we there? How about this? There we go. How about that? Hey, Brian.
Hey, Hal. I was just wanted to tell you exactly how they run on this stuff, and it has nothing to do with morals or ethics or anything. They play to this base that we're not going to raise your sacred taxes, that we're going to be the watchdog of your tax money and stuff like that. It's all a bunch of baloney.
Right.
But
that's how they run.
That's
right.
That's the frame that they put it into.
Do they not know about YouTube? Is that the thing? Do they not know that Barack Obama gave 95% of Americans a tax cut and at the same time the Republicans were willing to let the middle class's taxes go up if they didn't get the break for millionaires and billionaires? Just 2% of the populace?
I think they do, but unfortunately a large segment of the society is not paying attention or... is fooled by this. Can I mention one thing just in part? Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to be a downer on you. I mean, I'm 52 years old. It's not like I'm like, oh, forget it. It's not worth trying about. But there's two things that have to happen for us to really move forward. And you saw this with Blue Dog Democrats and everything like that. Number one, you got to get the funny money out of politics.
Right.
And number two, you got to get our vote back, meaning if it's got to go back to pencil and paper and people sit there and oversee it, that's what we do, because giving it to a couple corporations to say, oh, trust us, we can't share
totally
with you proprietary information. But unless those two things turn about, I'm sorry to say, I think it's all...
We'll be in big trouble. And thanks for the call. It's an important point. Ultimately, if we can have all this conversation about politics and we can write the direction of the conversation and we can actually have people start listening to the facts and paying attention and voting based on the facts. But then if it all has to bottleneck through Diebold and these machines that can be so easily hacked in a lot of districts, so much so that you have a college professor loading Pac-Man onto one of them without anybody seeing him as an exercise in showing how easily hacked they can be. Like he says, it's pretty much academic at that point. We're going to take a break. 1-800-STEF-12 is our number, and we're starting to get a bunch of calls about how the Republicans run next time. And I think you have to count on the Tea Party being dumber even than they are perceived to be by the general populace. They have to be so open to selling security and the country down the river. We'll see. I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. And I was asking before the break, how do the Republicans run on this nonsensical approach to policy that they've been pushing? And thank God on the line we have Charlie Pierce, who's joining us. Charlie, you there?
Happy holidays, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I didn't realize you were not only Stephanie wasn't there, but you're also mookless.
Well, no. I did bring in a mook today of my very own.
You brought in a ringer mook.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
Who's had a lot of practice being mooky in his own life.
Hi, Chris.
I do this whole week completely mookless. It is
not
true.
Only that, are you doing your show in Chicago too?
I do every Saturday.
Wow, this is like one of those 1950s radio stunts where you're like on the air playing Buddy Holly for, you know, 407 consecutive hours.
Exactly. I'm just staying on all solstice week.
Until people buy, like, enough Whirlpool dryers down at the
right. I just don't want to be at the end of the week standing someplace going, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. That's my fear. Of course, on the line, Charlie Pierce, author of Idiot America. And numerous articles, too numerous to mention, I think, but I will try at certain points. So this is, you've been watching this, I have no doubt. This sort of nonsensical, constant obstructionism, is there really a base that big that they can appeal to?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps you missed the election we had a few months ago.
I didn't, because there is
a voting base that's big enough for that to work in.
Mm-hmm.
I think you make the mistake of believing that you need to take the two mistakes. I think we all tend to make. Number one, that we're talking about the general population. We're not really. We're just talking about those people who vote in off-year elections.
Right.
And there's certainly enough people there for that to work.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, you're assuming an informed electorate, which we don't have anymore.
Right.
So those two factors in play, yes, you can run very successfully in many parts of the country doing exactly what they're doing. You have spent 20 years. I was lucky enough when I first started in the business at what used to be called an underground newspaper, but now it makes like $10 million a year, so they call it an alternative newspaper. But I covered the presidential
thanks
election.
To you, I would
the
like to say, for the record.
Yeah, none of it filters down, by the way, to people who write, I would point out. I covered the 1980 presidential election, so I got to look at the rise of Ronald Reagan.
Right.
And this all goes back to that campaign.
Sure.
This all goes back. This, when you spend 30 years convincing people that government is the enemy, that government is the problem, that government can't do anything, and then you get power and you proceed to prove your own statement, you get a very compelling political argument for the long term.
That's true.
Government doesn't work. So elect people who believe that the way you do, and then you don't. Then not only do you not only do you not have to do anything, you get political credit for not having done anything.
Right. You get into office running on an idea that government is a problem, and then you actually actively make it a problem. You hire people who are completely unqualified. You underfund crucial services, and then when they can't respond, you go, "See, FEMA's no good."
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. And this has been the standard Republican platform for long before the Tea Party.
Right.
I mean, Ronald Reagan said on the stump in 1980 repeatedly, the worst thing you can hear from anybody is I'm from the government.
I'm here to help.
How's the private sector solutions for the mudslides in California going right
totally.
Now?
Totally. How many corporate CEOs have showed up at your house to help solve a murder when it happens? You know, like.
Well, no, I tell people, you know, I use my own biography. My grandfather came to this country from Ireland and got a job on a police force in a city in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have any. There was no meritocracy there. He had a brother, a cousin who was already on it. My father spent 35 years as a public school teacher and an administrator. Before that, he was involved in a big government program called World War II. And after that, he was involved in a big government program called the GI Bill, which did nothing less than create the modern American middle class.
Right.
And, you know, so, I mean, I'm in the private sector. I spent my entire career in the private sector. But, I mean, for someone to come to me with my biography and say, well, you know, government programs don't work. I mean, I know the GI Bill worked. I know World War II worked.
Right.
You know how I know that? Because Germany's a nice place to visit now.
Right, exactly. Actually, arguably, in some cases, nicer than big parts of the American country. But here's the thing, too. Again, the Republicans fighting the GI Bill this time around had a lot to do with their fear that it will help recreate the middle class.
Well, I think they're dragging their feet on everything that would help the middle class, because I don't think that the Republican Party, and I think unfortunately large swaths of what I like to call the financial services wing of the Democratic Party,
mm-hmm.
aren't really invested in creating and sustaining a viable middle class.
Right. Because
I think that, you know, if there's a criticism you could make of the current president, is he listens too much to Geithner and Summers and Rubin and not enough to people who are, you know, people who are interested in creating and sustaining that viable middle class.
I really do,
much as I like this guy, and as much as I think, like, you know, a lot of the criticism of him is over the top, and I had a wrangle with Stephanie about this last week, I think he is a financial services Democrat in his economic policies.
I think he's I wouldn't be able to tell you
he ran as anything but. I don't think this is a bait and switch. I don't think he's any more or less of the president than he ran.
I don't think, Charlie, on point though, I don't think it, with the economic situation that this country found itself in, you could afford almost to be anything but that. That you didn't have necessarily the freedom to come in and go, well, this is what I, you know, this is my economic plan. This is what I would choose to do. Were I to be, you know, in a best case scenario, I think in all honesty, this place was pre-wrecked when he entered into it, and they did that on purpose. That I think, you know, the Bush administration's attempt, and this is pretty common in the right wing when they're running things, is trigger a U-shaped recession and let the next guy deal with it. To make them look bad, essentially, and to shake the bucket and do all these things that they benefit, all these benefits you get from a bubble and cleanup. And I think when it flatlined and became an L-shaped recession, they found themselves in way over their heads. And basically, Obama's been doing cleanup the entire time he has been in office.
Well, I will take that point, but I would argue that the Bush people's biggest fault in the economic catastrophe was in essentially, you know, defanging the regulatory apparatus and stepping out of the way.
No question.
The people who crashed the economy are people who work at Citibank and Goldman and Lehman Brothers.
Right.
Those are the people who crashed the economy, and those are the people that this president went to for advice.
Well, I think
nobody was holding a gun to his head to bring Larry Summers back into the White House.
That's true, but I think he had a bodies buried mentality. Like, we need to know who's running this thing right now to see where things have gone. I don't think you and I'm a big fan of Paul Krugman, for example. I think he's a great voice and he would have been a great asset in this. But I think there was a level of panic that, whether it was real or not, that they were delivering not just to the American people but to Obama himself. Coming into office, going, look, you can have your attitude about what you think the electorate can deal with and what the country can deal with financially, but this is a collapse, and only these guys know how to handle it. And I think to some degree, it has played itself out in the positive, in so much that you have corporate. It's certainly been the biggest profit switch for American corporations in decades. I mean, they're really in a better position than they've sort of almost ever been. And now that getting to the rest of us is a slower process, but basically,
I'll be honest with you, I don't see a process.
Well, no, I mean, I think Obama's and his team have been in more in a triage kind of position with the economy, and not in a position where they're actually developing, you know, a long-term health plan, as it were, for it, because the patient couldn't handle it yet. And I think that's really how they viewed it. And I think they, to some degree, that has actually parsed its way out and actually been, it has worked in that regard. Now, I think we definitely have a long way to go, and there's some long-term fixes. This is where you get the patient up off the table after heart surgery and goes, dude, once you're walking again, you got to stop eating the steak and the cheese and stop smoking. And that's the hard part. That's our job, I think, on the left of, you know, of pushing our mentality and our kind of economic concepts, as well as this kind of ridiculous mechanics of trickle down and Reaganism that's been crowbarred into the American public's mind, is the only functional way to run an economy.
Well, it's also apparently been crowbarred into the president's mind.
Well, I think so.
This is the only ground on which he can make a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then. Mm-hmm. I don't know where you go. If you've got a Democratic president with the most overwhelming progressive mandate, I think, in 40 years, and the political context is such that this is the best he can do, then you're screwed. You're never going to have it. The interesting thing is people somehow forgot the 2006 election, because the 2008 election was such an overwhelming event.
Mm-hmm.
And the 2006 election was a pretty clear repudiation of just about everything the Republicans stood for. You got Jim Webb getting elected, you got John Tester getting elected in Montana. You had a Montana go for, you know, Montana had an all Democratic both houses of its legislature. That was much more, I think, than the 2008 election, a nationwide repudiation of all of these policies.
Right.
And yet it doesn't seem to have had any lasting political impact.
Well, the policies are all back. I would disagree on point that there are a lot of things in the last 18 months specifically that have shifted. From don't ask, don't tell to health care. As much as there are elements of them where the Republicans were just going to dig their heels in, the amount of accomplishments he's managed to get in the face of the biggest obstructionist movement in the history of the Republican Party, and the simplest way of doing it with this kind of artificial filibuster, these endless amendment concepts, that he has still managed to get so much progressive stuff through in spite of all that stuff, and it still managed to create, by the way, a situation where the president's poll numbers are higher than the opposition party for the first time in, I think, ever. Where a president has lost seats during the first midterm election, coming in after his election, the president has not lost the trust of the American people the way he has in the past. The Obama actually has a higher rating amongst the American people than the Republicans have. And after Clinton was 2 years in office, after Bush 1 was 2 years in office, after Bush, George Bush II was going through, and Reagan himself, Carter, everybody 2 years into their first term gets this repudiation from the public, and often the public says, look, we believe in them more than you. This is the first time they have not done that, and that's the way they feel about Barack Obama. And even in spite of what we on the left think, that he should come out swinging, and why doesn't he take the fight to them more often, and why, but apparently the message is getting through in that regard, and that they are trusting him a lot more, even so, than Reagan in the same position.
Well, then my advice to him is to use that.
I agree, but I think he is. I mean, Start is going to go through tomorrow.
We'll see. I will be. I don't think he ever reckoned when he ran. I think a lot of what he ran on was basically treacle, and I don't think he ever really recognized the depth and breadth of the opposition and what they would do. I really think he believed all that "we're all one country" nonsense that he gave in that speech in Boston. And you know what? We're not. We don't like each other very much. And a lot of us don't, and a lot of us will take that, a lot of that will, ta- a lot of us will take that into the ballot box. My greatest worry about this guy right now is that he's going to look at the political landscape and he's going to say, I have to, for example, reform Social Security, because if I don't, the Republicans are going to immolate it. And that's what worries me about him.
Right. Well, this is the same thing that they try to push.
And I'm afraid that Social Security is going to be, when he runs for re-election, is going to be his welfare reform and his trip to China. And that's what concerns me. Because I don't think, there is absolutely no reason for him to have appointed Erskine Bowles and Alan Simpson to head his deficit commission. There was no reason for that deficit commission to even discuss Social Security, because it's not part of the deficit problem.
Right.
But they did anyway.
Right.
Okay? And Bob Kuttner wrote a piece this week about this. I'm afraid that he's looking at the landscape and saying, if I don't do something here, they're going to blow this up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he has to do anything here, basically. I think if he stands up and says, first of all, if he does anything to it, he's going to get buried in 2012.
I agree.
2012 by attack ads saying he cut Social Security.
Right.
Just as he's, if the deficit balloons, it's going to be the Obama tax cuts. Right. And I think, you know, I'm concerned about that because I do think he does have this tendency to that getting something done is better than is somehow superior to getting the right thing done. I'm concerned about sometimes it isn't going to work.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think that's the nature of politics, though. But I mean, if you look at Don't Ask, Don't Tell. How many times leading up to it did the everybody, you know, in the White House's publicity arm would refer to as the professional left, hung him out to dry and just beat him to. I mean, the Huffington Post ran article after article about Obama's stance on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and it's gone now, and it's gone as cleanly as it could ever go. It is not a signing statement that could be unsigned by the next president. It's not. It didn't get through the House to get mangled up. They managed to get it actually done, and permanently. I mean, that's it. And by the way, there is no crow eating going on from the people who were hanging him out to dry, leading right up to the day it got voted. Huffington Post, the day before the vote, ran a huge article saying that the president is willing to scuttle Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal in an attempt to get START through. And he did exactly the opposite. He and Harry Reid said, no, the START treaty, they'll have to stand up there and tell me why they think they want to dismantle the most important anti-nuclear proliferation treaty.
Well, and we discovered it was because Lindsey Graham was tired.
Right, exactly. He's exhausted.
He was exhausted by the job of being a senator.
I agree. But here's the thing. Never, I mean, in all honesty, we have to address the fact that in what you're saying or whatever, the fear that you have Obama. And I'm not saying, I'm not just carrying water for the guy in that regard, but I think credit where credit is due is not actually happening on our side.
Well,
and when you
I will give him credit on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mean,
for soldiering through on START. Even though they threatened if he tried to do Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We have to take a break because we've gone over in that big chunk because you're so interesting. That's what happens. Thank you so much, Charlie Pierce, for joining us.
Be well, guys. Have a good holiday.
Don't forget charliepierce.net for all your Charlie Pierce needs. And, of course, Idiot America, an amazing book. Thank you so much, Charlie.
Thank you, guys. Be well.
Bye-bye. Cheers. Nice. I'm Hal Sparks filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show. That's all I have time to say.
Oh, yeah, the whole thing seems a little twisted to me.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. This will be a really short segment, won't it, Tony? Because we went long with Charlie Pierce. It's a great conversation to have, but we probably have one time. We've got a bunch of callers that actually been waiting for a long, long time, long time. Let's go to Tony in L.A. Tony, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, how are you?
I'm spectacular.
Oh, good. What I wanted to make a comment on is the fact that the Republicans play to all the base fears people have. You know, you heard of Maslow hierarchy of needs. You know, the base fears, you know, eating, having sex, the whole nine. You know, they just play to, they don't like poor white people.
Yeah.
They definitely don't like black people.
Right.
They don't want to lose their power because, you know, I mean, what white America really is seeing now is the schizophrenia that people of color have been seeing, you know, for years.
Right. I heard somebody say that this weekend, that basically, like, the reason why Tea Partiers are freaking out is because they now know what it's like to be a black person any day of the week.
Absolutely. When you're working hard, you know, they don't get, like,
stink,
you can work hard and
can't get credit,
get
can't get ahead,
exactly.
Everything's set against you,
baited
into bad, you know, loans, getting, you know, lots of forms that don't actually give you any information. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so then now it's like, now what? And then, oh my God, I could become a poor white person. I mean, if you know, you never see poor white people on TV. The closest you got was like the Waltons.
Well, Jerry Springer, I think. The idea that there are no poor white people, and then you go, where did all these people at Jerry Springer come from? Because they never run out. This is the amazing thing.
But I think that's the main problem is really America, white America, is really seeing all the games. Like Michael Corleone said, we're part of the same hypocrisy. You got to see, it's never been about the real American dream, you know, that a lot of people think. There are a lot of other things going on, and now people are seeing it for once. And
absolutely.
It can be fixed. I still am an optimist, but you got to be real and see what's been out there for everybody else.
I totally agree. Thank you for the call. Excellent point. Excellent point. And it, you know, if we look at this, here's the thing. You voted for the Tea Party, or you voted for your GOP congressman last time because you thought the Obama agenda was destroying America. And then you really, I mean, I understand Fox is telling you that, but then when you look at it on merits, none of it's that far outside in any kind of crazy zone of things. You may socially may have an issue with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but I don't get how you think being against child marriage, anti-nuclear proliferation, even extending unemployment in the worst economic downturn in the history of since the Great Depression. We'll see. After the break, when we come back, we got a bunch of your calls. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, streaming live on halsparks.com/Ustream, or you can go to ustream.tv/channel/HalSparksLive. I'm here with Tony. He's counting me down. And Chris Bono, 1-800-STEP-12. It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show, and a good morning to you, and a happy winter solstice to all of you pagans out there who are celebrating today. A massive winter solstice, not just because it's a lovely holiday as it is on its own merits, but last night an eclipse leading into, so solstice eve, from an astrological standpoint, must be crazy.
Oh, what about the lycanthropes and the vampires?
They've been partying all night. A lot of them will listen to the podcast, which is, by the way, available by subscription on stephaniemiller.com. Great way to dovetail into that. How'd you like that segue? That was a good one. stephaniemiller.com, you know, you can get it month to month, or it's cheaper if you get the whole year all at once. It's like $5 a month or something. All the shows via podcast. It's amazing. And they're all cut down, so all the commercials are taken out. They actually put some work into it. And all that work you get for just $5, somebody like Tony, who's being forced. I mean, that's slave wages. I don't get that. How's that even? Oh, yeah. Who does it?
Miranda.
Miranda has to do it. Wow. See that? And Miranda's working for like a nickel for everybody out there. It's terrible. They have her in chains. It's so depressing. But I'm just so I'm just so glad she's here, so I don't have to cut it down. StephanieMiller.com for all your Stephanie Miller needs, and of course you can email Stephanie, Chris Lavoie, Jim Ward, everybody from there. And of course, we are streaming live at HalSparks.com/Ustream all this week, and we are taking your calls. 1-800-STEP-12, and we're going to Susan in Chicago, Illinois. Susan, you there?
Hi. I love your show. First
Thanks.
Time caller, and I listen to
Wait a minute. Hold on. I have to come up. I'm still trying to figure out what my thing.
Can you do it to my new
name? That's not going
to
work. Okay.
My name is actually Swapna, but I don't think Miranda got it.
Oh, Swapna.
So I had to say Susan because this
You
is
don't have to say that.
Friend.
I can say Swapna.
I know. Thank you. Well, tell Miranda it's, I know she was trying to make sure nobody called you in and gave you grief. Okay. Although I
actually, no. She lets people give me grief all the time. She doesn't stop that. That's okay.
But the name is, well, now she knows, and I hope she'll let me in next time. It
yes.
means dream, you know.
Well, we'll see how well you do. You're doing great.
Okay, thank you. You know, this has been an ongoing thing. You always bring up such good topics, and actually you know so much for somebody so young. It's amazing.
Well.
But I would actually, I have a certain desire for all you young people to do is for people, bring in people together and have conversations because you have a pulling power.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened with these Republicans, I call them the repugnants,
you know, right.
The repugnants, you know, I cannot call them, or the new Republicans, or whatever they are, but the only reason they are able to exist is because of the support they get. You know, if you are able to get away with something, of course you will do it, people with no conscience. And these people have been allowed to get away with stuff by a whole bunch of people, by actually people who are, I know that they're decent people, but they want to keep their position as elected officials, mm-hmm. so they support them. Like in my district, Kirk, you know, I mean, he gets elected all the time. I'm in Lake County.
Right.
And Illinois. And then you have, you know, the very, quite a few wealthy people, they're young kids. They get cushy positions, you know, where they, through networking, they can, you know, jump off to better positions, okay?
Right.
So they're not going to go against them, even though they're teaching, oh, do the right thing. But the right thing are for those other people, not for us, okay?
Right. Well, it's interesting to watch what their definition of moral behavior is.
And then we have the total apathy of the people now. Think in Europe, and I come from a place, I have actually participated in marches and stuff like that. My grandmother cried when she saw my picture in the front of the, you know, Calcutta newspaper, like uh-huh. the trip, with the hands up saying whoever is going to marry her because she's out there doing whatever she's doing. I'm not supposed to be out on the streets. I was supposed to be in class. So
right. In husband class? I don't understand.
No, like, not husband class. I grew up differently. Husband was last.
Right.
Yeah. But what I'm trying to say is, but this total apathy, you and a lot of other people, when you have the ability, we need to have coffee corners everywhere.
I agree.
Coffee corners, but the thing is, it has to happen. I'm on Facebook. I play Farmville, and I'm trying to do politics over there, okay?
That's
politics means, you know, trying to say, hey, you know, how about doing this part? Antonio knows that. Antonio knows that very well. I love Antonio.
Oh, the people in our chat room, you mean?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, the one I think he does in WCPT in Chicago, he does the
yes.
back room or something.
Oh,
yeah,
that's right, yes.
Yes, I like him. Then, you know, something else. Over the weekend, we had a party, and we had some people from the military. My son is twice an Iraq veteran. He's 24 years old. He's mm-hmm. he's a Marine. What has really blown my mind is the kind of brainwashing that they get, that they are doing something for them, and then they go ahead and vote against themselves. You know, I've been trying to brainwash here. So
I wouldn't call that brainwashing. I would call that dirtying up a perfectly good brain. We do have to move along, Swapna. By the way, somebody in the chat room is saying, is Swapna Sanskrit for dream?
Yes. Yes,
look at that. See, there it is.
It can be a nightmare.
I disagree. I think you're wonderful, and I'll make sure that Miranda is
awesome,
able to get
awesome,
you.
Awesome. I love your commentaries because you are funny, but information. That's what we want.
That's what I'm shooting for. Thank
but
you so much, Swapna.
Get other people in. Bye.
Will do. Cheers.
She was lovely. She is.
She's great. Let's go to June in Chicago, who listening via WCPT radio, I guess.
Yes. Hi there. How are you?
I'm spectacular. How are you?
Yes, Hal. I want you to know I was outside getting the snow off my car, but I had the radio on,
mm-hmm.
and I heard your conversation where you were basically making the statement that in many cases, the progressives are not giving the president credit for mm-hmm. what he is accomplishing.
Absolutely.
And I'm gonna tell you that's one of the things that's been okay. I'm retired. I belong to a group of retired professional women who have always been politically active.
Mm-hmm.
When Ed Schultz had his rally in Washington, we canceled our vacation plans and hopped the plane and went to Washington to be there, you know, for
right.
the rally. But now what, and the concern that we have is the lack of balance in reporting.
Right.
You know, when the day before the slaughter election, Rachel Maddow did a presentation on the policies that had passed under this administration.
Right.
I have not seen anything that detailed on a positive thing before or after.
I agree.
On the Progressive Network.
Not at all.
Before or after. And, you know, fine, we need to hear about all the things the Republicans are doing that are wrong. We also need to have the balanced reporting. I'm not saying don't criticize them. There's some things I don't like either.
Sure.
But at least have, I think everybody needs to kind of look at their tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And like the other night, the other day, I heard some reporter giving a, and I'm not going to mention the name of the progressive reporter that she was reporting to, but they were talking about what was going on in terms of the treaty and don't ask, don't tell, and this was before it passed.
Right.
And there was a lot of negative stuff when she said it looks like don't ask, don't tell is going to pass. The response was, that's good. I mean, two words.
Yeah. That's exactly my point. Don't Ask, Don't Tell on Saturday went to the dustbin of history. Not only a quick fix on a policy of discrimination that's been in place for the history of this country, that was a temporary fix until they could come up with something better, was sat on the books for over a decade. Nobody had even made a serious attempt at eliminating it. Obama comes in 18 months. It is gone. It is gone permanently.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't write a signing statement and let the Democrats in the House go back to sleep and avoid the issue. He made them stay there and go through this process, and it got voted down 65-31.
Yeah.
Then, by the way, the next morning on Huffington Post, the top article is about Julian Assange, and the article about the passage of Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal. Not even on the front page.
Right.
The START treaty is going up for a vote tomorrow.
Right.
It is the sixth story down on Huffington Post.
Yes.
The top story is about Julian Assange. It's amazing to me. And we have to take a break. And thank you for the call. And you make a really cogent point. And enjoy WCPT. It's a great station.
Okay.
And I'm not just saying that because I'm on Saturdays too. Okay. Cheers. Thank you so much. We'll take a break. And literally, the story about that says Obama on verge of major victory as missile defense treaty gains GOP support, a great HuffPost story, right, is down, sixth story down between FCC caves on net neutrality and a state-by-state guide to medical marijuana. This is the frame that HuffPost has put on the START treaty. We'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. This is the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ooh, what a lovely program.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in on the Christmas week with Tony, playing music that only we could play when we come on the air. That's Blackened by Metallica, suggested by somebody in our chat room on halsparks.com/Ustream, where we're streaming the video live for everybody. And I think if the Republicans have their way about the nuclear treaty, that's how they would want it, I think. I suppose. I mean, I guess the Armageddon crazies among them would really want that thing. But we have a ton of people on the lines. I mean, the phones are jam-packed, and I think that's an awesome thing. Let's go to Bernice in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's been holding on for a long time. Hey, Bernice.
Hi, Hal.
Oh, it's Bernice. Beg your pardon.
Bernice, yeah.
Hi, Bernice.
Hi. You know, Charlie Crist is right about when he said that the Dems and President Obama, they're looking at the landscape and they're worrying about what Republicans are going to do and then compromise everything away. But the other thing we have to worry about is that when they're not in power, they obstruct everything. So this goes to the whole filibuster thing, that we really have to push the Senate to change that, get to the 51 vote majority.
Right.
And
then
we ram through what we need to. You know, we get a progressive agenda completely through, and then we don't have to worry about what Republicans are going to do when they're in power, because they won't be, because people will finally see that the progressive agenda is what needs to happen for us.
Ultimately, once we get into the position where votes are actually happening, then you'll get a really good idea of the difference between the parties. And right now, what they're doing is they're killing stuff based on cloture. And thank you for calling, Bernice.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. But the interesting thing to me is, in all honesty, there's some loss about, like, the she was just saying that, you know, the Republicans, you know, we have to, they're looking at the landscape and what they can get done, and they can compromise things away. Don't ask, don't tell, and the hard line on START is not compromising stuff away. That is holding to a campaign promise in a very sound way, even against major Republican obstructionism. The Republicans are saying, we will scuttle START if you try to allow gays to serve openly in the military. And the Dems in the House and Senate did it anyways. Let's go to, where are we? Ralph in Wolverine, Michigan, which has got to be like the coolest place to be from if you're, I guess, paramilitary or, you know.
We're hardy up here.
Yeah, you would have to be. Because you know, those things, I think in Michigan there's a law, right? You can only name a city after an animal if they completely overrun the place.
Actually, well, they've been gone, unfortunately, for almost 100 years from northern Michigan. It's up in the northern tip right south of the Mackinac Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, indeed. Where the Mackinac race, Mackinac Island is not far from there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you're saying the average person in the Tea Party isn't like what?
Well, I've heard comments multiple times just today and also over the past couple of weeks saying that Tea Parties are racist, which is absolutely uninformed and ignorant.
Well, for the record, hold on. I didn't say that today. And B, I also I can't speak to when I'm not on the air, so I'll only be able to address.
A caller did, and you didn't dispute it.
Well, I actually made the case that the GOP is running on the idea that the Tea Party are stupid. And I was focusing more on that point because I think I equate racism and stupidity, because I think they're simply blind servicing of a thought form.
Any Tea Party would agree with you that racism is stupid, but I've been to multiple.
I don't think any of them would. I think there are members that are very soundly racist, and I think they're comfortable doing that. And saying that there are no racists in the Tea Party is just as much an obfuscation as saying that they are completely racist, which is not my point at all either.
I've never seen or heard firsthand accounts of any.
Really? You have never seen the videos online of people standing with the word N-word written on a sign, standing at a Tea Party event? You haven't seen any of that stuff. You've never seen any of those people actually.
I'm saying at the events that I've attended, I've never seen any sign, or I've never talked to any person firsthand who showed any inkling of racism. I would want to talk. I've heard of people who have been to events. There were racist people there, mm-hmm. who they were thrown out, and then it was confirmed later on that they were plants.
I don't know that I buy the idea of racist plants. The evidence is sort of overwhelming in a lot of these in the Tea Party events, and maybe not in Wolverine, Michigan, or even in Michigan State at all. But I don't think
evidence. What evidence are you speaking of?
I mean, one of the guys who runs one of the major websites actually is the guy holding the sign with the N-word spelled with an A-R, because the reason they spell it that way is so they can talk about it in chat rooms without being censored. That's become very common. And he works with FreedomWorks. So I don't think that's a mystery. The point is, I'm not going to argue whether if you're going to argue with me that there are zero racists in the Tea Party,
I think you're correct. I would think that there's a bad apple in every bushel.
Well, I think they have more than their fair share, but I did not at any point intimate that the entire Tea Party was racist. And as a matter of fact, my point is that I think the Republicans are skating on the idea that the Tea Party in mass are stupid and aren't paying attention, and think that that it is sheerly enough that they just go against the president on every point, regardless of its merits.
I think they're misunderstanding the average Tea Party member, and there may be a few who have that feeling of them, but I think you're still seeing evidence. I think Harry Reid pulling the omnibus bill was, I think, largely due in part to the activism of the Tea Partiers. There were a lot of calls being made to senators that they did not support that. They thought that was absolutely wrong.
Well, Mitch McConnell, for example, was one of the people who had one of the largest requests for pork in the omnibus bill. Pulled it because of pressure, absolutely, from the Tea Partiers among them. But there were a lot of other reasons why they pulled that one in particular. But I'm talking about the START Treaty. I'm talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I'm talking about the Lilly Ledbetter Act. I'm talking about TARP itself. The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, I think they are opposing a lot of these things, regardless of the elements in them, strictly on principle, and disregarding, I think, anything that, you know, libertarian Tea Partiers may believe. That's the case. We're up against a break, but I'm not going to buy the idea that somehow the GOP is actually servicing the Tea Party. And if the Tea Party thinks that the GOP is actually doing the job they sent them there to do, then the job they sent them there to do was no job at all. I'm Hal Sparks. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEF-12 is our number. We'll be getting your calls after the break because our lines are jam packed. It's a great conversation. Thanks for joining me, and we'll be back right after this. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show and Tony's first music fail of the morning. Oh, he's trying so hard to find something musically to put in there, and he clicked the wrong button. That was fun. So that's Pipeline by Anthrax. So a big shout out to Scott Ian, who apparently Tony harbors deep love for and actually sneaks songs in for it. let's go to the lines. Okay, let's go to Russ in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Russ.
Hey, good morning. I could tell you exactly how they get away with these policies and keep getting elected. Now, first thing they did was got the communications bill passed.
Right.
And that allows a few to control all the radio stations and TV stations like Fox that promote their propaganda, and they prey on homophobes, xenophobes, and people who think tax money belongs to them. And they get these people to be against Democrats. And
I agree.
That's about it.
I mean, I think he's absolutely right. There's a part of this that is a 30-year plan that they've been instituting. And you notice they didn't back down from their guys and start running hit pieces. Rush Limbaugh at no point started chipping away at the power of Ronald Reagan midway through his terms, even though clearly they had this plan long term. Okay, let's go to Lori in Greenville, South Carolina. Oh, do we have her? Do we lose Laura? Oh, sorry.
She gone.
We did. Sorry. Let's go to Juanita in Cincinnati.
Nope.
Oh, nope.
Hey, wait. But I'm in Rancho Cucamonga.
Oh, well, okay. That's right. Well, it's yeah. Yeah,
that's got to count for something, brother.
Sure, I agree. I've been out there. I've actually studied martial arts up in Rancho Cucamonga.
Where?
Kung Fu Sansu. It was actually where they had held the Sansu kind of Western meeting.
Is that Bill Lasseter?
Bill Lasseter, absolutely. Grandmaster Bill Lasseter.
Bill Lasseter, man. I was just shy of my black belt with him.
He's an amazing guy. Sweetheart.
I'm going to tell him you said hi, Hal.
Please do. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Bill Lasseter. He's a gentleman and an amazing martial arts technician.
My fire alarm's going off, by the way.
Quick, before you burn down, tell me what you wanted to say.
I didn't know that, okay, cool. We'll have to talk off the air. Maybe I'll email you about Sansu because that's a great art.
Absolutely.
All you got to do is look at the 911 responding denial,
right,
in my opinion, to know what the GOP is all about.
Yeah, for people listening that may not be up on it, the Republicans have blocked a bill to fund health care and emergency services for the 9/11 first responders. The bill was $6 billion for lost income, health care for them and their families, and basically that was a number that they had pared down over time. And John Kyle was on the news yesterday saying, well, they need that money for it. Didn't they do it out of the goodness of their hearts?
Oh, my God. It's sickening.
Yeah.
I called all my conservative friends and said, how can you stay with a party that has no soul? I mean, really.
Absolutely.
They're void of a soul. And it was $8 billion. And,
yep.
And only because they found some loophole with offshore tax shelters,
mm-hmm,
that these big companies get to have. And on top of their tax cut that they just received, I think if they had their way, honestly, they would get rid of all social health programs, any kind of financial support programs for the middle class.
I agree. I think for any class.
All of them just to amass more wealth. I really do believe that.
Yep.
And the other point I wanted to make is, you know, where have you seen with all the TARP money that's gone out, any kind of reform or any kind of easement with mortgages, with foreclosures. We're going to have a second round of foreclosures, unlike the first round, which was because of the lending, predatory lending. The second one's going to be because people are losing their jobs. People are out of work.
Yep.
People need assistance. And this party is just sickening to me.
Well, they've been running interference. Again, it's one of those situations. And thanks for the call. And definitely email me about Kung Fu Sun Tzu. And art, I recommend anybody study. It's incredibly functional and full of a good group of people.
Do I find it on your website, Hal? Is it on your website?
My email and all that stuff?
Yeah,
absolutely. Go to halsparks.com, and there's an email list there and all that kind of stuff.
They'll still kick most young people's ass.
Oh, my God. I have been choked out by Bill Lasseter in a demo, but that's a long story, too. He didn't even realize. He was just showing me a mild technique, and I'm like, I'm starting to black out. Cheers.
Well, I hope you get down here. I'd like to trade with you, man.
Absolutely. We'll work out sometime. Cheers.
All right, brother.
Take care. Bye. It's amazing. Okay, so most people, if you don't know, the main reason, and never forget this, the main reason why the Republicans have been fighting against the 9/11 First Responders Bill is because it is going to be paid for by the elimination of a tax loophole that multinational, not American corporations, but multinational corporations have used to get money, a tax break, when they move jobs overseas, when they take jobs away from America. They actually get a tax benefit for that allows them to pack up their gear, pack up, fire people, go through all the HR stuff. That costs money. So they get a tax benefit for having to go through that element. This bill would eliminate that and use the money, the revenue that it would actually get back, instead of giving it out to these companies, to pay for health care for 9/11 first responders. That's is kind of amazing. Okay, so there's Lori in Greenville. Lori, you there?
I'm here.
Hiya.
Hi. How are you? Hey, I just want to say thank you to the Stephanie Miller Show. It's about the only progressive show right now I can listen to because it's more, I don't know, they must understand the way the world works, and remember that.
Well, I think, in all fairness, by the way, I think Bill Press does a great job in that regard too. I think he's pretty good about not getting eaten up with the, like, let's slam Obama instead of actually talk about the merits. But go ahead.
Okay, I haven't listened to Bill Press. I really do like Bill
Press.
He's
great. He's a good guy.
On a little bit earlier than I'm in my car to listen
yeah.
to my satellite radio. But anyway, I just wanted to say I think that the president does get weakened by the left as well as the right. The right thinks he's a socialist. The left thinks he's a Republican and who doesn't go far enough. Mm-hmm. But in reality, he understands the way the Senate works. He understands the filibuster and that you do have to compromise. He always said he would compromise, and I'm sure that that will make a lot of people angry at him, at me, but he's a pragmatist. He understands how this is going to work, and who would have thought Don't Ask, Don't Tell was going to go through because
right.
it was dead a week ago.
Right.
I think the START treaty will go through, and the Republicans that vote against it are going to have to explain it at some point. I don't know how they can vote against something like that.
Right. It's amazing to me that, again, right after Don't Ask, Don't Tell gets – and thank you for the call. We have a ton of calls, but I appreciate you bringing it up. The right after the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal, it's pretty much washed from progressive websites. I don't see any response to it in any major way except for, well, it's not going into effect immediately, and so the implementation isn't happening, but – boo. And then that's it. Huge, historic movement. The president gets zero credit for it. Why does he get zero credit for it? Because the stories leading up to it said that he wouldn't do it. Not because it didn't happen, but because the stories, and this isn't even the White House. By the way, when people tell you that the president has lost the narrative and that he's not catching up to, he's not telling his story, whatever, and then are part of the problem in that regard. When HuffPo says the problem, the president has lost the message and progressives don't understand where he's coming from and the good that he's doing, and then look at the stories that they write and go, well, you're part of that. When CNN goes, every story that comes up, CNN will talk about the START treaty based on whether or not the American people understand it or not. Not helping them understand it. Just questioning whether or not they get it. That's like standing outside of a school, locking the doors and saying, are kids learning? Asking kids on their way in after you've locked the doors and said, you can't go inside. I'm not going to tell you what's going on inside the school. But I'm going to ask you, do you think you're learning anything from being here on school grounds? It's the most absurd notion. And there's so much complicity in that. And let's go to Steve in Minneapolis, who thinks the GOP has won by marketing and better messaging.
Hey, Hal, what's happening, brother?
How are you?
Hope you're enjoying the Ace Frehley vinyl.
Steve. Yeah, absolutely. I have Steve works for My Rocket Science. It's myrocketscience.com. Yeah.
Myrocketscience.com.
Yeah, great. Great indie indie band and indie music and even largely mainstream. I mean, you got Smashing Pumpkins on there now and John 5. And he came to my show in Minneapolis. Chris Bono was there and brought me an Ace Frehley vinyl from Ace's new album Anomaly, which was just sweet. So that it is in a point of pride. So thanks.
Our record collections are very similar.
No doubt.
But no, you know, I wanted to say it's two things. I mean, you know, the GOP consistently wins on the marketing and the messaging, and it drives me crazy. We've had 16 months, and that's also part of the problem too with the Obama administration is that their messaging and their marketing from Gibbs on down. I mean, the fact that they weren't hammering every single day for the last 16 months about the tax cuts that Obama got. I got a tax cut.
Yeah.
You probably got a tax cut. I mean, you know, it's about the messaging. Conversely, you know, the Democrats, I mean, you're hard-pressed to put it down to two or three bullet points what any of those folks who lost, or even just the party as a whole, what they were running on.
Well, fascinatingly enough, it's an interesting point, is that most of the people, the Democrats who lost in this election were not progressives. They were blue dog Democrats who were, were Republicans of another arm, essentially Reagan Republicans. They're the ones who lost their seat because the right decided they'd rather have a true Tea Party or a true Republican in there. But the progressives themselves, the losses in the Progressive Caucus were next to nothing. If anything, they had gains. So here's my issue with the messaging part, Steve, and I'd love to hear your take on it. But I think they get a massive assist from the press. That they just, it's amazing how there are more conservatives on MSNBC than there are progressives who actually have it say across the board. That CNN, in an attempt to kind of kowtow to the to Fox's already saying, like, well, you know, they're going to say this. So CNN goes, oh, no, we're not. We'll give you guys just as much free time on the air. They create a straw man argument and then watch other people defend against it.
You're absolutely right, and you know the news media, the rest of the so-called mainstream media, trips over themselves in this, you know, the whole false equivalency game and trying to prove that they're not conservative or that they're
right,
showing both sides. When very often, you know, there's not always two factual sides to every issue.
Right, exactly.
Let's face it. So I mean, I think it's two prong. I mean, look, you've got a gigantic propaganda arm that's 24/7 nonstop in Fox News. And I like to put news in quotes whenever I write it. So. but you know the point is you know that's sometimes you gotta be on the offense and not the defense. I mean, I would have consistently call them out, call the GOP out, and it can't just happen from the net roots. It has to, you know, it has to be repetitive, it has to be aggressive, it has to be often, and trumpet the fact, you know, all the great things that have gone on during, you know, arguably the toughest times we've ever seen in our lifetime.
I agree. Thanks so much for the call, Steve, and I still have to talk to you about the 0-1 possibilities. Very excited.
Can't wait to hear the new music. Love it, bro.
Very excited. All right, cheers. Thanks, Steve. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm in studio today with Chris Bono. We got a few more calls on the line, too, and we'll get to them at the
bottom of the hour.
I know it's the top of the hour, Tony. We were having this argument before. But I'll give, in deference to Tony doing radio 24/7, I will let you win that one. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Do the GOP actually care about governing, or are they just trying to collapse the government from the inside so that they can go work for corporations that will run the world? Did I just ask a circular question? I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The more you hear it, the funnier it gets.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, rocking in the USA, because it just can't wait. That's right. No, crank it up a little bit, Tony. Don't be afraid. France really had the chance. There was plenty of romance. All right. I've been to England, too. There wasn't much to do. Just driving Tony crazy. But the one thing I'd rather do... See what I mean? There's patriots on the left. That's my point. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. We're almost at the bottom of the show. Tomorrow, David Bender will be on the air with us for the full 3 hours. It's going to be a great discussion. I have no doubt whatsoever. But we've got a few more callers on the line. Let's get Juanita in Cincinnati, Ohio. Got a little bit of time. Hi, Juanita.
Oh, hey. You know, since several callers mentioned about Chamber of Commerce, mm-hmm. I would like to switch my...
topic?
Yeah. Well, actually, the Chamber of Commerce or the multinational companies are already controlling the system. They're like the...
Keep in mind, there is an international Chamber of Commerce, but that's not who we're talking about. We're talking about the U.S.
Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
Yeah, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
Actually, they are already manipulating the system anyway, and it's like it's actually a national security risk because
right.
they could like derail START Treaty, or they could derail something that has to do with our economy, weakening the nation from within. So they are already doing parts of it already.
No question. And look, once you start getting – and it's an excellent point. I have to move on, Juanita. Thank you for calling. Here's the thing. Once you get into a situation where defense companies are being traded on the stock market, and then
– Oh, my God.
And then – you've got the Chamber of Commerce acting on their behalf and dealing with other countries before they deal with the United States, essentially jockeying, lobbying for another country's... At what point does that cross into national security? At what point are they just like okaying arms sales? Let's go to Joel in San Francisco, which is an amazing city.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Hal, my big point is that way too many progressive talk show hosts take their cues from the Huffington Post.
Yeah.
I'm from California. I've known Ariana for years.
Mm-hmm.
Ariana is not pushing the progressive agenda. She's pushing the Ariana agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And she did this when she was a big conservative, and she was trying to shore power on the right. And the whole bit was, you know, Michael Huffington, that whole thing. I watched her up close then. I've been following her a long time, and now she's trying to undermine Obama in order to increase her own power and influence on the left. That's what's going on.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you in that regard, except for the fact that I don't know how much day-to-day she has involvement in HuffPost anymore. You know, from what I hear on the ground is over there that essentially it's being run by interns and a couple of, you know, spoilers that have been put in position. I'm a big fan of Howard Fineman, and when they brought him over there,
right.
I was like, this is a good sign.
I
think Howard Fineman will bring a bit of parity. Quite frankly, the articles that he's written, I'm not against. The problem is they get buried like every other positive story. He's got, almost having no editorial reach over there. I don't get it.
Well, if it's not Ariana herself, it's...
She's allowed for it to happen because she's fine with that agenda.
Well, also, someone is incredibly censoring all the comments on Huffington Post. If you try to say anything, there's a clear agenda. We don't have time to talk about it.
Right.
That's being pushed on there. And I'm quite certain, I mean, as certain as I can be, that Ariana originally shaped it because I'm familiar with what she was doing when she was in, you know, on the conservative
side. Sure, absolutely.
It's
the same
technique.
It's about power brokering.
Exactly. She found her niche on the left. She couldn't find it on the right. She found it on the left. She started feeding everything that people on the left wanted to hear, feeding the red meat, anti-Bush,
right.
Get her foot in the door. And unfortunately, on our side, we're not as good liars and manipulators as the right. And so we are more naive. If someone starts saying anti-Bush stuff, oh, she must be good. She must be one of us. People should not listen to her as closely as they have been.
No, I highly recommend if you're going to go, and thank you for the call. It's a great point, Joel, and lucky you for living in San Francisco. If you're really looking for a great outlet for news, Daily Kos has always been terrific, but Crooks and Liars, terrific site, crooksandliars.com. ThinkProgress.org does amazing work. Media Matters for America, who, by the way, I'm hoping to get our dear friend Stop Beck on Twitter in this week to have him talk on the show because they officially brought him on as part of their anti-Beck run of things. And quite frankly, they don't have to be anti-Beck. He's pretty much anti himself. They're just reporting. You decide, to coin a phrase. Let's go to Bethany in Chicago, Illinois. We just got about a minute left.
Oh, hell, I'm a huge fan. I just want to say that this is, I wish you'd ask the Michigan guy if he considered the Nazi mustache Obama sign racist, because that seems to be at every rally. And if you look at the 9/12 video, this is like, they have signs, Pelosi is Jezebel. And, I mean, these are the same people that tried to stop repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Of course.
And the media is just giving them so much attention.
It's silly.
Nothing to the Veterans for Peace. There's a blackout. And it's just ridiculous. I'm so angry that they turned this into Obamacare and CNN censored it. And it's just
right.
18 months and they don't even have a plan.
I agree.
And we
have to move on because I'm at the bottom of the show.
Roger Christie, please bring him up because he's going to be in jail Christmas. And he's a political prisoner.
We will do. Thank you, Bethany. We got 30 seconds. I'm Hal Sparks, joined today by Chris Bono, helping us out in the chat room there. HalSparks.com/Ustream. I'm at Hal Sparks on Twitter. Thank you guys for being so important as a part of this conversation. Thanks, Tony Sorrentino, for playing a little bit of Anthrax right out of his id, and Miranda for finally getting here to do calls. I'm Hal Sparks. We will see you tomorrow with David Bender. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.